Tesla's total addressable market for the Megapack was already absolutely massive. But as usual, they're continuing to improve their products to make sure that they stay at the head of the market.
I highly doubt we're just going to stop at the human form factor. We're going to have many other use cases for embodied AI.
What's really clear for anyone who's watching this space is just how enormous the energy demands from data centers is becoming. OpenAI was basically just saying, like, you want to actually architect this where you've got storage as close to the chips as possible.
It's like if you're mowing the lawn and low grass and you hit a really tall patch and your mower goes, that's literally what's happening with these things, because there is physical resistance there when you put a load on the grid.
This mega block thing, this is sort of the core point of this discussion. I want to get through this because, so I haven't even had a chance to watch the video from Tesla yet. I just,
oh, really?
Just read some pieces. Yeah, I've been traveling like crazy. I just got back on Tuesday. I've been, we've been sort of managing some stuff. My wife has a shoulder injury, so we're like sort of working through that with the little one. So yeah, she'll be fine. It's just a little bit of a hectic time, but I was going to watch it before we came live today, but I'm like, you know what? I'm actually going to approach this from the standpoint of listening to it fresh from what you guys saw from that presentation and why you guys might be excited about it. Because I'm trying to understand. So from my perspective, from our last energy discussions, is that it does seem like Tesla Energy is still being not properly accounted for in a lot of different circles. Sort of this energy trend that we're heading towards in the next 3 to 5 years. From Tesla's perspective, it seems like the Tesla story is mostly robotaxi vehicles, human or robot, depending on the circles that you're talking to, there's a subset of those. But energy never seems to be part of the discussion. So I don't care who goes first here, but like, help me understand what is this mega block thing? Why is it a big deal? Is it a big deal? How does it play into AI and sort of the energy needs from that perspective? But let me stop there and sort of walk through that perspective.
Yeah, I'll take the first crack at this, just since I saw Jordan was muted, and then of course he unmutes immediately. But I'll just share, my thoughts. So I think this is a big deal, but I think it's an evolution, not a revolution in terms of the product. So, it's incrementally better. It's about, 20% more energy density. So you're going from 3.9 megawatt hours per megapack to 5. So like that's pretty impressive. I think the big thing is the mega block, I guess that they're calling it. That's the transformer and the switch gear all in one. You've got the bus bars, which removes a lot of the cabling and a lot of the on-site assembly. So just doing a lot of smart things to simplify processes, take out, it goes back to what Elon has done for so long. It's like, the best part is no part, just figure out what you're doing stupidly with any particular process, remove some of that stuff out of there and overall make a better, more streamlined process. So, there's a lot of nice things about this, but I don't think it's fundamentally a significantly different architecture than what they had in the past. I think it's just smoother, better, slightly more performant. And I want to maybe come back to the data center part in a little bit. I was just actually at a conference I just got back to, which was kind of the intersection of data centers, AI, and then energy, and like how those fit together. So I've got a lot to talk about on that, but I want to make sure to get Jordan's insights here first. But then the last thing I think I'd say is just the, you said like, why does this matter to Tesla? And like, why are people underestimating it? It's 50 extra gigawatt hours. They're going to be close to a run rate of 200 gigawatt hours between, all their different sites here, probably by the end of next year when this goes live. So probably it's going to take a while to ramp up to that level, but 200 gigawatt hours and let's just say $250 per kilowatt hour average price, maybe that comes down over time, but you're talking about $50 billion in revenue from the energy side, which is a big deal. So this is growing really quickly and, at decent gross margins, this will be.
By what year do they expect to hit the 50 billion?
Well, so, and the 50 billion is my number. So, take it with a grain of salt. But they said they in the presentation they were talking about the Houston site being like starting production by end of next year. So let's say it takes a little while for them to ramp up to the full 50 gigawatt hours. So I don't know, let's call it mid 27 or something like that, where they're at that, you know, 200 gigawatt hour run rate annually.
Okay, got it. So they mentioned about you can keep going.
No, I mean that was all I was going to say. It's just like, you know, at $50 billion and, you know, let's just say a 20% gross margin, even that's $10 billion of, you know, gross margin annually, and growing very rapidly. So it starts to become very meaningful just with that level. But I've monologued for too long, so I'm curious Jordan's thoughts on this.
Go for it, Jordan.
Okay. Yeah, Matt's summary is great. So I'm just going to kind of be restating it in a different way and giving my flavor on it. A good analogy would be the progression from like the Powerwall 2 to the Powerwall 3. They're integrating more and making it more deployable. So you have a product that's more easily scalable and it's also lower cost because they're making it higher energy density and fitting more into each one of these packs. So it's Tesla's total addressable market for the mega pack was already absolutely massive. But as usual, they're continuing to improve their products to make sure that they stay at the head of the market. So I would say this, you know, this keeps Tesla, you know, at the head of the pack for the next another 3 to 5 years.
Got it. Okay. The and just make sure I understand the density portion of this new product. Is it just stuffing more batteries in the same form factor? Is it improving cooling? Is it different chemistry? How are they increasing the energy density?
As far as I can tell, I have to rewatch the presentation. I've watched it once, but it's probably worth two passes because there was a lot of subtle information in there. But it sounds like they're moving to larger battery cells, that helps them pack more into each one of those mega packs. Now they're also as Matt indicated, they're simplifying the connections between the mega packs and the switchgear and transformer that comes along with that product. So it's a lot easier to assemble. There's less parts, less components. That automatically reduces your weight and may have had some impact on the fact that they can fit 25% more energy in each one of these now. And I think they also said part of the reason why they selected this size is because if they go too much bigger, then they can't throw one of these on the back of a truck. So they kind of have to stick to that form factor.
And that kind of makes sense. Okay, so what I've heard thus far is that Tesla is, as usual, taking steps to figure out how to get their products to scale as fast as possible to the largest possible number in the long term, and they're creating these sort of processes or steps or changes to their product to get to that point in the wake of the massive energy needs that are very obvious that are going to come from artificial intelligence deregulation. Like one of the big things that we talked about last time was co-locating a lot of these sort of energy generation systems with these AI training clusters that they're building and whatever else. Like there's a lot of loosening of regulations to try and get companies to have their own essentially power plant next to the thing that they're trying to do. AI is a huge driver of that. But it seems like anybody could do that, which is going to drive towards decentralization of energy generation potentially and energy storage, right? So is this? So am I reading this as this is Tesla's attempt to bring that future faster and to try and capitalize on that trend? Or is this just a natural step that Tesla would have taken anyway? Like, I guess what I'm trying to get to is like, is this a response to what is obviously happening with artificial intelligence, or was this a natural stepping stone for where we were going from an energy perspective? I don't know if Matt, maybe you're better equipped to answer this, but you tell me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think those are necessarily mutually exclusive answers. I mean, yeah, one, Tesla probably would have done steps like this in general, just because they always have this, you know, constant improvement kind of mindset with all their products. But I think what's really clear for anyone who's watching this space is just how enormous the energy demands from data centers is becoming. So I alluded to this before. I just got back from a conference. It was called YADA 2025. And they're basically talking about how do we get to, like, you know, YADA watts or YADA bytes of compute in the longer term. But it was super interesting because, you know, you had representatives from, you know, Oracle, Microsoft, OpenAI, all these hyperscalers talking about their plans and how they're, you know, essentially dealing with the energy shortage that we have, as well as what they're seeing on the AI side. And I think my overall takeaway, if I can really simplify it, is like they have very aggressive like CapEx assumptions and build out plans because of how much demand they thought they were going to have. And pretty much all of them were saying, we actually need even more than our previously aggressive plan. And what used to be the bottleneck a couple of years ago, which was like chip manufacturing, now very clearly the bottleneck for more deployment is energy. And a big piece of this, so there's like the generation piece, energy generation, which is super key. But since we're talking about megapacks, I'll, you know, kind of talk about one part of the way that data centers operate, which is really tricky. And that's the load profile of these data centers is extremely wonky. So one of the guys there was talking about how, okay, you might have a 1 gigawatt data center, but on average, it's only going to be using, it's going to only be about 2/3 utilized. But with the way that these computations are running, it's extremely hard to actually manage these swings. So, you know, it'll go like from full load to just like dropping instantaneously by very significant amounts. And so, you know, that's not such a big deal when you're a 50 megawatt data center. But if you're like a 2 gigawatt data center, like you literally can't do that to the grid. Like you'll break stuff. So the guys from OpenAI were talking about how like on-site generation is essentially a must right now, and having some way to buffer these wild swings in a very short period of time is extremely important. So, you know, I think Megapack has a part to play there. And I mean, the inverters they have are extremely valuable for kind of managing multiple different generation types, including the grid, and kind of getting a constant output. But I think you might even need more like super capacitors and things like that to handle this. So OpenAI was basically just saying like, you want to actually architect this where you've got storage as close to the chips as possible. So while I think Megapack is going to be part of this overall solution, there's a lot more parts too. And overall, I think this is all ships are going to rise because there's so much demand for power and so much demand for energy storage that if you're just playing in the space at all, I think you'll probably do pretty well.
And just to sort of clarify this for the audience that may not understand why sort of a battery storage thing would make sense, and y'all correct me if I'm wrong here, the battery storage is significantly more capable at dumping power at a moment's notice than a grid would, because a grid needs to spool up. And then, the opposite is true also. You know, whenever there is no longer a instant need for the power, the battery storage can immediately cut that off, whereas the grid would have to spool down, right? Is that a fair representation?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure I'd say that the grid is extremely capable of like ramping up and down. But I think when you just start talking about the scale, I mean, right now we're talking about gigawatt scale data centers, but a lot of the presenters that I was just at this conference with were talking about, all right, 5 years from now, we're going to be talking about, you know, 20, 30 gigawatt data centers. Like the benefits from scale in this space are just so enormous that that's the way that this is going. And so like you just like you'll break stuff on the grid. Like your local substation can't handle regular routine, you know, like gigawatt swings.
It's too much power.
It's not even just the power. I mean, it's like the voltage draw and the you know, inertia from these turbines. Like when you flip on a switch, like you're actually kind of like increasing the resistance on these spinning masses. Think of a gas turbine or a steam turbine or something like that. And so if you are like very significantly and very regularly kind of jerking these machines that are all connected to the grid around, like you're just increasing the probability that you're gonna kind of break things. And it's just not a viable solution to be putting all those very massive swings onto the grid. You're going to need some amount of ability to absorb those instantaneous swings locally.
It's like if you're mowing the lawn and low grass and you hit a really tall patch and your mower goes, that's literally what's happening with these things, because there is physical resistance there when you put a load on the grid. And so it's like a lawnmower hitting a tall patch of grass. And if it gets so bad, the lawnmower turns off. And it also places stresses on all the transistors and all the other electronics that need to operate within these tight bounds. It's kind of like when you you put a heavy load on your power in your house and the lights dim. That's actually hard on your computer and all the other electronics. So you need a buffer there to protect everything else, as well as provide power for the primary need.
Okay, got it. That makes sense. Okay. Wow. So the battery obviously is going to be much better equipped to do that because it's just a battery. It'll just dunk the power. You don't have any mechanical pieces per se. You'll just be like, okay, here's the power you need. You just need enough batteries close enough on site to be able to deliver that power on and off whenever it's needed. And that's why something like this would make so much sense long term. Okay. One of the things that I'm hearing is that, hey, this sort of like the need for compute is not going to be as big as you think it's going to be because the algorithms are going to get much better, or like whatever, the neural nets, whatever the processes they're going to employ is going to massively reduce the need for so much, so many chips to draw from, you know, power. And then on top of that, there's going to be new chips that are going to be more efficient, that they're not going to draw nearly as much power. And so all these needs for power are vastly overblown because you're actually not going to need that much, as much as you think, because the improvements in the technology are going to far outweigh those needs. How do you reconcile that?
I don't think that's actually the case. I think there's there's one thing saying that the current bottleneck is chips or energy. But if you're looking longer term, I think it's going to be just like whenever Tesla ramps a vehicle. You have to ramp all this AI infrastructure, and you're going to be playing whack-a-mole with 100 different challenges. And as these chips get more efficient, they're going to be more economic to produce useful work. So the demand for them is going to increase. So the reduction in cost and an increase in efficiency over time will also increase the demand for chips. So there's a lot of people right now having a debate over whether chips are going to be the bottleneck and over different time periods, or whether it's going to be energy. In my view, it's going to be one or the other intermittently, because each is going to hit their scaling ramps and the other one's going to catch up. So you have these two different exponential curves that you kind of have to deal with when you're ramping it.
Matt, did you want to add anything there?
Yeah, I mean, there's a name for the paradox on this question that I'm blanking on right now. But you know, this is something Jensen Huang was talking about when you know, DeepSeek came out and it was, you know, like 90% or whatever more efficient, and it's like, oh my gosh, maybe we don't need all these NVIDIA GPUs, and you saw the stock like drop significantly. But what Jensen was saying, and what I've, you know, been hearing over and over again, is exactly what Jordan just said, is that, all right, if you reduce, I mean, let's just say you make these chips 10x more efficient, which is like essentially what they're trying to do every single generation, is 10x the efficiency. Okay, well, that lowers the cost per token. And that means that you can get much better answers for the same amount of power input, which is going to translate directly into more demand. And
Jevons paradox.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
You can Google. That's good. I think what all these hyperscalers are seeing is that as you, like, of course you're seeing these efficiency gains and all this stuff, which is like making real strides in lowering the overall cost. But like that is being more than outstripped by the increase in demand from users. And just anecdotally, it seems to me that we're still kind of in the early phases of adoption. Like I know a lot of people who don't use, you know, any AI tools in their work or, you know, in their daily life. And as I'm using these more and more and like getting better answers, like I'm using ChatGPT's deep research more because it's giving me better answers. And so then as I'm getting those better answers, then I'm like saying, okay, that opens this other little wormhole down here that I want to, you know, start going down a rabbit hole. So, you know, I absolutely believe that because these are delivering so much value, that as the costs go down, you'll have a more than offsetting increase in demand.
I think, so I agree with that for sure. I mean, and what's fascinating about that is that that's the digital space, right? We're not even talking about embodied AI and the needs that that's going to have from a training perspective and all that stuff. So like, you know, the human or robots, like the Optimus bot is what we talk about a lot on the channel. So, and then, you know, what other form factors of embodied AI are going to exist in the future? I highly doubt we're just going to stop at the human form factor. We're going to have many other use cases for embodied AI. You know, digital AI is going to continue going through a massive sort of moment of gaining more and more intelligence, which is going to, you know, create more and more need for compute. I guess the, you know, is there going to be a point where the training side of the equation is going to hit a limit where these battery systems are no longer going to be as valuable as we thought much sooner than maybe we expect, and it all shifts over to inference? And so inference is not going to really need much from a, like, say, a mega cluster, or maybe it does, I don't know. Like, let me reframe the question. Is this need for energy, where battery storage, specifically things like the mega block and the mega pack, could vastly benefit from, is this a training compute only thing, or is this an AI period thing? Is it both training and inference, right? Any AI needs going to need this sort of co-located, call it whatever, battery thing. Does that even make any sense?
Well, I'm actually scripting on this at the moment for one of my upcoming videos. And I think what you're talking about is there's going to be, currently we need these massive data centers for training AI. And I think what you're saying is over time, we're going to need more inference compute, because as we train these, so we're going to need a lot more inference compute over time. And that's true. And that's part of the reason why Tesla kind of set aside their Dojo program, because if training is only going to be like 5% of your total compute, why would you invest all this money into that? Why not just use their current inference chip and make it also good at training, rather than having a dedicated program project towards that? So yes. Now, but it's also a matter of, so you have the training compute, which is better centralized, and you have the inference compute, which also currently tends to be centralized. However, over time, a lot of that inference compute is going to be pushed out to the edge in robo-taxis and robots and things like that. So you're ultimately, it could be that these centralized, at least I took a wild stab at it. Currently, the amount of compute people have in their homes and devices in terms of power compared to the amount of compute that's in data centers is like 3 to 1. So if Elon wants to build 1 terawatt of compute.
Sorry, who's got the 3?
Oh, I'll explain it here in a moment.
Okay.
So if you have, Elon wants to do 1 terawatt of compute. If you do that 3 to 1 split, maybe only 250 gigawatts of that 1 terawatt would be centralized training, and the rest would be pushed out to the edge. For example, if you have 1 billion, or let's say 4 billion Optimus robots, and each one needs 250 watts, there's your terawatt right there.
So that doesn't imply, though, that the needs from a training perspective are going to go down. If anything, it probably means that the training is going to be increased, because there's going to be such a massive need for the inference to work on the edge.
It's going to have less of a slice of the pie, but the pie is going to grow by hundreds of orders of magnitude.
Multiples. Yeah, okay. Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Like, so your training needs are going to significantly increase. And I mean, one of the ways that I'm just thinking about this right now is, like, you've got all this infrastructure out there that has, for the most part, been to, like, train on the world's corpus of text, which is extremely, you know, efficient in terms of, you know, kind of the size of storage that you need to process that. As we start going into a world where we're processing a lot more video and handling things like that, the compute needs are going to increase, like, very significantly. And then even just on the like thinking about the types of things that we're going to be training in the future, Elon had a good post about this recently, where it was like talking about all the degrees of freedom in a robotic hand, and like, okay, you can make this left turn if you're in a car, you know, any number of ways, but the number of inputs are like pretty minimal. You know, it's like, what's the angle of the steering wheel, and like how aggressively am I hitting the accelerator? It's like not that complicated. But then you're going from like, okay, how do I pick up this can on the other hand, when I've got like all these different joints and all these different figures, and like, do I have my arm up here? Do I have it down here? Like the level of nuance and the amount of computation that is going to need to be done to handle more complicated product predictions like that, or training runs like that, I think is going to like be very significant. You know, that said, I think as much training compute as we're going to need for that, I completely agree with what Jordan said. Like, the overall pie is going to just like expand massively. We're going to need way more training compute than we have right now. But at the same time, I think training is only going to be about 10% of the overall compute needs in the long term, I think, because there'll be so much more demand for inference, because you want all this stuff to be doing useful stuff in the real world.
We lost our camera, Matt. Thank God.
What is going on?
I'm just kidding. No, you know what? This podcast is sponsored by Rebellionaire. As you can see, top tier production. Now, we know a lot of you are Tesla fans, and especially Tesla investors. And if you have more than $1 million of Tesla stock, Rebellionaire could be the perfect fit for you. Rebellionaire is an investment firm that helps Tesla investors reach their financial goals. They do this by helping you plan for your future, and they also institute strategies like trimming and adding, covered calls, etc. So if you're somebody who believes that Tesla has long-term potential, these kinds of strategies could maximize the number of shares you have by the time Tesla reaches those goals. And the guys at Rebellionaire do this by doing so much research on the Tesla story, and they do a lot of novel research as well. Things like doing cross-country full self-driving trips to really gauge and truly understand the capability of that specific software. They've done really novel research around the energy side of the business and other parts of the business as well. And so instead of dealing with a typical investment firm that may give you the cold shoulder by viewing your investment as too risky, the guys at Rebellionaire will help you reach your goals while fully understanding the Tesla story. And so if you're a Tesla investor and you have more than $1 million of shares, and you're interested in finding out more about Rebellionaire, I have a link for you in the description in the comment section below. You can go to rebellionaire.com/Farzad, and that's how they'll know that we sent you. And now back to the podcast.
And Farzad, somebody's probably going to say this in the comments, so I'll mention it. Whenever you hit the table, it makes a booming noise.
Okay, so, yeah, I forgot. Thank you very much. I'm so glad I have an autistic person on the panel, because otherwise I wouldn't have known. Thank you. No, I appreciate that. Yeah, I have to remind myself that this is bolted to my desk and not the stand. Thank you very much. I will try my best not to do it. Okay. And you know what? I trained myself a while ago to not do it. And then I moved the stand to the floor, but the floor stand was kind of wacky to work with. So I moved it back to my desk. But when I was on the floor, I could have banged my table and nothing would have come through. And now that it's on my desk, the banging's coming through again. So I got to retrain myself not to bang on the table. Oh, damn it. Content creators.
Well, yeah, there's so much muscle memory required for shooting videos that people don't realize.
I know, dude. It's like it's so crazy. It's so no, but
my,
I appreciate
my battery time. Died. We need more mega packs for edge camera.
I gotta get you. You know, you can get an adapter from Amazon. You can just plug in your camera directly to the plug. You don't need to have a battery.
These things normally last like 10 hours or so. I must have just not changed it recently. So I don't know what's going on there.
Well, you're a battery fan, so we'll let you use your batteries instead of, you know, plugging into the wall. Yeah. Okay. So that makes perfect sense. That makes so much sense. Okay. Now, go ahead, Jordan.
So one thing this brings to mind with me, and you might be covering this next, but you were asking about megapacks and how that relates to training data centers. So the next question is, if two-thirds of this compute or three-quarters of this compute is not on those centralized data centers, where does that power come from?
Yes.
Residential solar and batteries is going to absolutely explode, because the cost of transmission is now like 60% of your power costs. And even though there are some headwinds with the current administration and tariffs and losing tax credits and things like that, there are ways to significantly reduce the deployment costs of this residential solar and have costs for the customer that are like 35% below the cost that they pay for the power that's coming from the grid.
Do you think the administration, so like that sounds like an insanely good forcing function to get the change going, where 60% of your costs are transmission costs. So that obviously means remove the transmission cost and let it, you know, sit on a localized place where you can have distributed energy generation, basically. Do you think this is protectionist? Is the administration being protectionist to the energy lobby by doing this?
Matt probably has a view on this as well, but in terms of a home storage and solar system involves two things. It involves the solar and the batteries. And the batteries, they've kept a lot of the subsidies in for those. Who has the king's ear? I think what's happened with the batteries and solar is that there is a big, you know, lobby against that. But batteries, you have the military that wants the batteries. And batteries also benefit the non-renewable portion of the grid. Batteries buoy all the technologies and make them more useful, which is why Tesla at, or XAI at Colossus, they use both batteries and gas generation because they're complementary. Batteries complement everything. So it's actually a fairly reasonable and pragmatic choice that they made there to continue supporting the batteries, but remove the solar. I didn't agree with it, but at least it was semi reasonable.
Had some logic attached to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Got it. Okay. All right, that's fair enough. Okay.
The biggest thing that'll help with residential deployments and things like that is reducing all the stupid red tape. Instant approvals for solar and batteries on a house, for instance, cuts double-digit percentages off the cost of a deployment.
Wow, no kidding. Mm. Wow.
And I did want to circle back to your original question, which I think I spoke around before, Farzad, which was like, okay, as we're going to more and more inference, do we actually... not need as many batteries for that reason. I think as Jordan highlighted, there's stuff like right at the edge, like your Optimus and your FSD that like, obviously you're not gonna have a mega pack power and that stuff, but you still are gonna have a very significant need for, you call it regional inference data centers that are going to be like very massive facilities, because there's gonna be a lot of stuff that you're doing that similar to what ChatGPT does today, but even more in depth. I think agentic AI, we haven't really even dipped our toe in the water of what that's going to do. And I think that's going to create a huge need for inference compute going forward. And for that, you don't need it to be like super energy efficient and, like on the edge. You want it to actually be in a data center. So you're going to have, I think, specialized inference data centers that are kind of local to the population center that they're trying to serve. And I think those are still going to be absolutely massive. I think they're still going to have absolutely massive energy needs, and megapacks are going to have a place to play there. So I don't think it's necessarily the case that like megapacks will only work on training. They certainly won't do edge compute, but localized data centers, absolutely.
Got it. Is that the reason why Oracle popped so much in the last few days? Because they were guiding towards that?
Well, no. Oh, I mean, Oracle, I just like absolutely just like smashed their forward guidance. I'm going to botch these numbers somewhat, but I think they had something like $3 billion in quarterly Oracle Cloud Infrastructure revenue for that most recent quarter. And they were saying that by 2030, they were going to have, what was it, like $170 billion
That's
in
insane.
Annual Oracle Cloud revenue. So they gave this 5-year ramp where it was like they were like increasing 77% and then like 80%.
Wow.
And so like they painted this picture that was just like wild.
But are they connected? Isn't Oracle a cloud service provider for some of these AI companies to run their inference? Isn't that one of the things they do?
Yeah, so they manage a lot of these data centers, yeah, for some of the hyperscalers. But they're extremely efficient at like building and operating these. They're partnering with a lot of different companies to essentially provide that, get these data centers up and running quickly. But that shows you where the demand is, though, because these are actually, I forget the accounting term that they had, but they're deals that are, at least partially booked, that are going out that far and that are increasing that drastically.
Wow, that's insane. And so a percentage of that earnings is going to be tied directly to the cost structure that's going to generate those earnings is going to be directly tied to the energy generation and storage piece for those cloud facilities, obviously.
I mean, they'd probably view it more as, investment in data centers, and they are leasing some of them. So like there's a bit of a kind of complicated thing there. But I think these hyperscalers tend to think in terms of like compute. And then naturally with that, you've got to figure out how you're going to power that. So it's right. Kind of like the secondary thing that comes along with it. It's not necessarily that, energy generation and storage is driving a lot of these decisions. It's just
of course.
Okay,
no.
If you're increasing that much, it's like naturally you got to like figure out how the hell you're solving that problem.
That's my point. Maybe I'm not articulating it properly. So what I'm saying is, so if the driver is compute, the second order effect is going to be, I need more energy.
Yeah.
Right.
Like I need way more. Yeah.
Yeah. Got it. Okay. Another thing. Okay. Anything else on this mega block before I start getting into this? Again, like I've been traveling a lot. I'm finally getting back to the thick of things, but I saw a post from Elon that Tesla's going to start making its own transformers. And that seems like a giant deal. So before we shift to that, do we want to hit anything else on this energy storage thing?
One thing to note that this also does, these reduce costs, the lower the cost of your storage, the longer storage durations that you can provide. So one of the things that they're targeting with this mega block is to do 8-hour storage. That is one of their goals. So that's something that will expand their total addressable market over time.
Give me an example of why that is beneficial.
Because right now we're just taking the low hanging fruit on the, you like my little hand signal?
Very good. From now on, when I say low hanging fruit, I'm going to have to go like this.
It's cute. I like that.
I could call you something else for doing that, but I'm not going to do that.
Fair enough. A lot of this energy storage that they need, it's like, you know, a 1 hour or 2 hour storage, because they just need to buffer the grid that much. But as you expand the amount of grid storage that you have on the grid, and you want to do larger amounts of power, you want to slice off larger portions of those peaks, you need longer duration storage. And it's also extremely helpful for renewables, buffering those. So as we get more renewables on the grid, you need longer duration storage for longer periods of buffer, because there's more intermittency.
Got it. So that could open up the door for utilizing energy generation sources that would have been not super logical, but now become more logical to use. So it sort of broadens the places where we can generate energy from.
It improves the economics overall to make renewables more viable.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Okay. Anything else on the storage front before we shift transformers, Matt?
I mean, maybe just to touch on a few other highlights of that meeting. I mean, one was the maintenance piece. So right now, Tesla owns all the maintenance on the megapacks that they're doing. And you can imagine as they're scaling out to a larger and larger organization, and you got these deployments worldwide, you know, that's just like a in-house staff that you've got to really accelerate training and development on. So one of the you know, I think least sexy, but like very impactful things that they're going to be doing is they're essentially handing over a lot of the tools that they're using for maintenance to their customers, so that if you're a utility, you're PG&E, you can have your own technicians go in there and do a lot of the maintenance that previously Tesla technicians would have done. So I think that also helps to lower cost overall, which is a great value proposition for these customers, and probably helps Tesla to just stay nimble and focus on what they're great at, rather than, you know, deploying this like huge worldwide you know, maintenance organization that would have to grow by, you know, orders of magnitude over time as these deployments continue to grow. So that was another small little win that, you know, I think helps to deliver a lot of value to customers. And then, you know, there's just a lot of little things like that they spoke about. But yeah, we can move on to transformers.
Okay. So Elon said that Tesla is going to start making its own transformers. Why is that a big deal? And even before we answer that question, you know, this is something that Elon was talking about, a couple years ago, and maybe longer, where he's like, okay, if you move down the path long enough, the first bottleneck is going to be sort of the data that you need to run your training. Then it's going to be the amount of training you need to power the compute. And then it's going to be the energy. And from the energy perspective, the biggest bottleneck is going to be transformers. So did I paint that picture correctly? I want to make sure I didn't miss anything there. I'm pretty sure that's sort of how he outlined it. Looks like it. So why is Tesla getting into transformers a big deal? Or is it?
So it's first important to clarify what we understand is going on there. So I think in the presentation, and I think Sawyer Merritt also talked to the engineers there, they're not currently making their own transformers. They're integrating transformers from other companies. So when Elon says that they're planning on using transformers, it sounds like that's something deeper in the future. But now why it's significant is that there is like a multi-year lead time on transformers. So it does two things. One, it removes that, if Tesla did get into manufacturing their own transformers, that removes that bottleneck for their customers that they sell their projects to, so they can get those projects running more quickly. And two, it helps with the integration in their product and deployment. It helps deploy it more quickly. This is not an area of expertise for me, so I'll pass it over to Matt and see.
Did I misunderstand what Elon was saying, that Tesla's going to start making transformers?
He just said yes in his message. He said, somebody said, are you going to start manufacturing transformers? He said yes. But in the presentation, I believe they said that they're integrating transformers and then from other people. And Sawyer Merritt also talked to the engineers there, and they said that they're using transformers from an outside source. And then I have a source as well that said, hey, those transformers are actually from outside sources, and they're not currently manufacturing them in-house. So possibly Elon met in the future they're going to be doing it in-house.
Okay. Okay. Go ahead,
yeah, that's kind of my impression as well. You know, and I've been really curious on this space, and just coming back to this conference that I was just at, I was actually speaking to a manufacturer of transformers, and he was actually saying there's like a very wide lead range in lead time. So if you want some of the, like the, you know, medium voltage transformers, you know, that are, you know, a bit smaller, some of those are, you know, they might be a, you know, week wait times that are in the weeks, you know, less than
Sorry,
a year.
Matt, but and before we do that, I apologize. Can you give an audience a breakdown of what transformers do and why there's different types?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, let's say you've got a power plant, you're generating the electricity there, then you need to send it, you know, hundreds of miles or whatever to the ultimate end customers. That's going to go on very high voltage transmission lines. And you want very high voltage because you have losses as you transmit electricity from one spot to another. But if you have higher voltage, the losses are significantly lower. So like even at the electricity generation site, you're going to have what's called a step up transformer. That's going to step it up to the, you know, to the grid or to the transmission level voltage, you know, it might be 136,000 volts or something like that. And then you're going to have step down transformers that take it from transmission down to the distribution level voltage. And then from your, if you see that little like box that's on your utility pole by your house, you know, that's going to step it down from the grid voltage to your household service voltage level. But then you've got, you know, all sorts of other different needs. So, you know, you might have generators. If you're coming back to the data center question, you might have generators because you're making electricity there. And, you know, you might need to step up or step down potentially if you're getting it from the grid to whatever is going to be usable at your data center. And so like there's just getting electricity is not just one thing, you know, it comes in many different, you know, voltage levels and, you know, I'm not an engineer, but there's like actually having the power quality you need at the exact specifications, you know, at your particular rack and for your overall data centers is extremely important. So, you know, getting those, transformers essentially, adjust the voltage to get it to what you need to at that particular location. So that has been a very big bottleneck, like Elon said, but, when I was having this conversation with this, manufacturing company that makes them here in the United States, and they've also got a kind of JV in China that's doing the same thing. He was saying there's actually a lot of, available options in China, but like people don't want to go over there and use them because there's like dozens of companies you've never heard of, and you can't afford to have it fail. So they want something like, a well-known Western brand that, you know, has like proven quality controls and, you know, UL specs and all that sort of thing. And depending on like, if you want one of like the big heavy duty, like very significant transformers, like, yeah, those are definitely going to be multi-year lead times. And a lot of those are built custom, but there's some more off the shelf kind of stuff that does have lower lead times.
And so the key takeaway there is that if you want to get to a place where you want to generate power and use power, the transformer is always going to be part of the equation, correct? Is that fair to say?
For the most part, yes, unless deep into the future, they go completely off grid and they run everything on DC, renewable energy and megapacks. So you don't have to do this conversion. You generate all the electricity on site and you make sure the generation is at the same DC voltage as the data center is consuming it, then you just pipe it across, eliminate okay. The need for the transformers.
So that's it. We talked about this last conversation too, I believe. So how far away? Okay, so that's a fascinating one, right? Because you're removing a variable that's part of our current infrastructure that is bottlenecking. That is a bottleneck for getting power going to places at a fast rate, because there's so many different moving pieces, right? You have, you know, you have the power plant, then you have the transmission lines, then you have the transformers to step up and down the power that's needed, and then you need, you know, the distribution at each locality, right? So that's you know, one of the benefits from that is that you centralize the power to one place. You can make it really big and generate a ton of energy, but the downside is that you are sort of bottlenecked by a single point of failure that's going to impact potentially millions of people. And then on top of that, if you want to scale it up, it's a pain in the ass because there's all these different variables you have to go through. You have these regulatory bodies you have to go through. You have a very entrenched legacy industry that hates change, which we talked about before, right? But if you move towards a more localized way of generating, storing, and distributing power, you can bypass the transformer equation, which is a potential bottleneck, by just getting the thing that generates the power and stores the power and the thing that consumes the power to be on the same page. Like, this is a layman way of saying it, right? And once you get them on the same page, like the language they're using to communicate how much electricity is coming through, or like how much like the opening and closing, the thing that shoots the power and the thing that receives the power, they can both talk to each other. You don't need a translator in between, which is a transformer, right? So how far away are we from that, and what do we need for that to actually be reality? And what is the forcing function for that to actually become a reality?
It's already happening with OpenAI out in the desert. I think they're partnering with Oracle to build what they're doing out in Abilene, Texas. And I don't know the exact details of that, but my understanding is it's, for the most part, off-grid. It's going to have a connection to the grid, which is useful for, even if you go completely off-grid, it might be handy to have a connection to the grid. That way,
fail-safe.
As a fail-safe, or to even sell power out. So these off-grid data centers might actually be able to buoy the grid and help support it. But my understanding is they're going heavy into natural gas and solar out there. What I don't know is if they're like using megapacks or something. Because if you're using that spinning generation, that's AC generation, and you probably need to run it through a megapack or some type of transfer in order to convert it to DC to use in their data center. So I don't know enough about that, but the point is off-grid data centers are already starting to happen. But over time, they will increasingly be mostly DC power sources like solar and batteries. And that's going to go by 2030, most of the new ones are going to be like that. Between 2027 and 2030 is my view. And at that point, I don't see why you wouldn't make the investment to just eliminate that equipment. Because it just doesn't seem that difficult.
It's more costly. And like on the chip level, you're not using AC, like you're using DC. And, you know, at the same time, the inverters are a big part of your overall losses and efficiency and a big part of the capital cost.
Inverter is the thing that flips it from DC to AC, right?
Yeah. So, Tesla was actually saying at this Megapack event that they're using these silicon carbide inverters in their actual megapacks. Well, like we know those are like the most expensive kind of inverters, which you kind of need because you got to have the like super high quality power quality. You can't afford to have it fail. So it makes sense right now that's what they're doing. But I mean, if you're going purely from a first principle standpoint, okay, you know, like let's say you got a solar plant, well, that generates in DC. So then you're going to like lose some of the power by converting it to AC. Then you're going to go put it in a megapack, which stores it in DC. So you got to like, you know, invert it down and then invert it back to AC to like transfer over to the data center and then like convert it back to DC, like at the rack level. Like it's kind of dumb actually, but there's so many little things that would need to change along the way to truly get from like that vision of, all right, let's generate in DC and deliver it right to the chip level at DC. Like, I don't think we're really close to that yet. Jordan, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like that would make a logical sense of where we go, but I don't think we're close to that right now.
Yeah. Can I ask a question before you answer that? Actually, go ahead and answer that and ask the question.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. I think there kind of has to build an economy of scale, and there has to be a forcing function for that. Right now, they're trying to scale these data centers as easily as possible. They don't want to develop a new architecture in order to deploy these data centers. But there will come a time when it's like, all right, you know, at this point, it's just easier to build these off grid, re-architect the whole thing. It's going to become more difficult over time to keep doing it the way we're doing it. So when is that pain point? When is the breaking point? I think it's probably going to be by the end of this decade, in my view.
Does the chip need a complete transformation on how it operates if you're going to switch it from AC to DC? Does it just completely change everything about the chip? So help me understand that.
I was going to let Matt answer that because he kind of answered it a moment ago.
Okay.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's more like the racking level and like the power input into the actual data center facility. Cause like you've got, you know, your lights and everything that are using AC and like, you know, some cooling equipment, which is optimized for AC. And so you've got like the same source of power that for stuff that you want to run on AC. And then like you're converting the, you know, the main power user is going to be these GPUs and these chips. And so those are going to be in DC. And so like you're like, I'm not an expert here, but I assume it's at the rack level. You're actually doing that conversion. I mean, over time you maybe convert that, but, I think it's going to take a long time. Like Jordan said, because there's like so much you'd have to re-architect. And I think a lot of these data center operators are risk averse. You don't want to stick your neck out too much.
This could be some of the plans that Tesla or XAI have with Samsung, because they're talking about not just manufacturing the chips, but also building all the packaging around them. So if you're going to start designing a chipset and the packaging and infrastructure around that chipset from the ground up, is it worth designing it so it's more DC capable?
You know what's fascinating about that? Maybe I'm sure you guys have thought about this, talked about it, but it just like sprung in my head now, and I may have sort of read it somewhere or heard somebody talk about it, or maybe this is like a novel thought, but I highly, highly doubt it. So doesn't this marriage of AI 6 and Megapack, Megablock position Tesla perfectly to co-engineer their compute and training and energy generation and storage sort of verticals to make a one-stop shop place where you can just be like, here's the Tesla AI training cluster, you know? You know how they have the gigafactories and they're like the factory is the product? Okay, so what's stopping Tesla in the next 5-10 years, let's say, maybe even longer, to make a solution that says, just give us a building, we'll come in, we'll install, you know, or they do it for themselves, we'll install the solar panels, we'll install the localized energy power generation thing that we need, we stick the mega packs in there and the mega blocks, they're optimized to deliver power straight to the training racks. The training racks run AI 6, right? And it's all just Tesla. It's all Tesla. Is that a product that can exist or that they can sell, or like, am I thinking like too crazy about this?
I think you still need the GPUs. So AI 6 might be really good, but I think NVIDIA is still going to be king of the GPUs. And so like with a lot of these training data centers, you're going to want like a mix of GPUs and inference compute like AI 6. I think that is going to make some sense, but I think the vision that you laid out could make sense, but I would, the only caveat I would say is that Tesla would still probably end up buying a lot of GPUs from NVIDIA to support that.
And is that because the NVIDIA solution is just going to be that much better and much more power efficient when it comes to training than anything that Tesla could muster from an inference perspective?
Well, yeah, I mean, the GPUs and the inference chips, they are doing different things within the data center, and NVIDIA's GPUs are just like so far ahead of everyone else's that I don't think you're going to be replacing them anytime soon.
Got it. So my understanding was that AI 6 program and later would be also used for the same things that the GPUs would be used for once that program is out. That's the only reason why I pose that.
Well, I think that that's true in that you are going to have. They're going to be used for training as well as like out in the field,
yeah.
Doing inference stuff. But like you won't only have a data center that's only AI 6 chips. Maybe I'm wrong on this, but my understanding is that no, you'll need like the GPUs with the AI6 inference kind of working together at the data center to do the training runs that you'd want.
And why is that?
So this is where I start to get slightly out of my depth, but you know, the GPUs are extremely good at one type of compute, and you know, the inference chips just has different strengths. And so what I've heard from listening to smart people talk about this that know way more about the space than I do is, you know, it used to be that you'd have only GPUs doing training, but now they're finding there's better results if you add some inference chips in there as a result. And Jordan, I don't know if you've got better insights on why that works.
Well, there's a lot of things we don't know. I think the short answer is the answer isn't in the room, but let's speculate. So
let's just make some stuff up.
I thought that's what we were doing this whole time.
Let's make it up. So Tesla currently is using a mix of like inference and training to like train their FSD models. I think they're using it to generate synthetic data and test simulations and things like that. So there is a need for both inference compute and training compute. But all of these chips can do either. They can do both. It's just, what are they most efficient at? So we don't know. I think Elon said that AI5, I'm not sure if he said this about AI5 or AI6, but it would be fantastic at inference and pretty good at training. So there's no reason it can't be used for training. So the question comes down to, for me, is it good enough to work, and can they get it so much cheaper than they can get the NVIDIA chips?
Yeah.
And can they have it scaled in time and build all the packaging around that by like 2028 or 2029 to use it for training for their own needs? So it's like, we don't know enough about how the scaling is going and what their plans are. I think the ultimate goal is to use as many of their internal chips as possible for both the training side of their compute and the inference training side of their compute.
Yeah.
But even then, a lot of people, you know, as I said earlier, there's going to be bottlenecks for power and bottlenecks for chips, and it's going to be a game of whack-a-mole. And I think XAI and Tesla, regardless, are still going to continue to buy chips from NVIDIA just to keep that pipeline going, similar to the way they still buy battery cells from as many manufacturers as they can. But I would hope the long-term vision, you know, late 2020s and early 2030s, that AI chip, AI7 or AI8, is so good that they can start building their data centers and build everything just as you're suggesting. They're going to provide the power. They're going to provide the solar panels, whether those are internal or sourced from a third party, doesn't really matter. But they're going to build everything. But I do not think they're going to be delivering that as a product to other companies, because I think their internal needs are going to be so great that they're just going to be building as much as they can for XAI and Tesla.
That's fascinating. Yeah. So that's the only reason why, you know, one of the comments that Elon made is, you know, like at some point we want to get to a point where the training and the inference happen in the same sort of like machine place. So like, you know, even in your edge, with your edge inference compute, you also want to be able to train, because that's kind of what humans do. Our brains do both. They do inference and training. And so the thought process is like, okay, why can't it just be like a human brain? It just trains and infers in the same package, right? It's not like, you know, we absorb the information, we go through a training run, we get better at it, and then we just continually do training runs until we get really good at it, and then we just infer based on our training to create good results, right? And so if that chip can do that at the edge, if you clump enough of them together on a training cluster that is optimized for training, then in theory you could get better results there just purely training, and then having your, I don't know, like this is so out of my depth, it's like just taking the clues and the sort of the, you know, the breadcrumbs here and there and try to, yeah, exactly. Like, you know, like they're low hanging fruit and no, trying
this,
to figure
this,
out.
This is a different one. This, yeah. This is branching possibilities.
Yeah. Low hanging fruit, branching possibilities. Okay. Got it.
Didn't
know I was going to get a jazz hand lesson today from Jordan. Wow. This is fantastic. Yeah. Okay.
The smile that goes along with it is what makes it, though.
Yeah. I'm a little sunflower.
A red and purple one at that. Okay. Very good. Okay. So that's incredibly helpful. Okay. Do we want to hit anything else here before we wrap the sucker up? Was there something else you guys wanted to hit?
I think we hit it pretty good.
What do you think, Matt?
We hit it hard. We hit it well.
Yeah. I mean, you have a lot of children to show for it.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Inappropriate. Okay. Very good. Where can people find you guys? So, Matt, where can people find you?
You can find me on X at Matt Chasm Matt. Terrible. Or you can just check us out at rebellionair.com.
Jordan.
At Limiting The on X and The Limiting Factor on YouTube.
Perfect. Thank you, everybody.